Hello and welcome to Grand Gut Repair and Alkalizing Nutrition for Digestion. From the start of the program till now, we've gone through each of the sections of your digestive tract, and my goal was to teach you as much as possible about how each of those pieces work, and then what can go wrong, and what symptoms you might be seeing when those things go wrong, so that you can do some things, you can take some actions, some things that are just day-to-day actions that you can do in your life, and some things that are a little bit more specific, and when you do those, are going to help you to get a little bit more focused. There's a lot of things to balance. There's a lot of juggling, like, what do I do first, and what's my highest priority, and how do I know what I need to be focusing on? Do I need to do the candida repair? Do I need to do the HCL challenge? What about the transit time? Do I need to do, what do I need to do? So I've put together some really handy dandy charts so that you can have a good sense of what's the status of your own gut and what it needs to be optimized and to be functioning ideally. Because really, if your gut isn't optimized and your gut isn't functioning properly, then really nothing can be functioning properly, right? Because where do the nutrients come from if the gut can't absorb them? And what happens in the body and the immune system if the gut can't filter out those toxins? It's a pretty important part, and a lot of people gloss over it. Oh, I just have a little bloating and gas. I just have a little indigestion. I just have some pain. There's some burning, but it's not a problem. I can, you know, take this medication or take this herb and it goes away. But really, is that what you ideally want? You don't want just the pain to go away, right? You want to restore the ideal optimal function of your gut so that everything else can work great. So that your hormones can be in balance, so that all the enzymes and factors, the anti-inflammatory factors in your immune system can be working properly, so that everything in your body, your neurotransmitters and your brain chemistry. So what I want to do today is to review where we've been up to this point so far in terms of the program, and to review what you can be doing and how you can interpret where's your first step, what you need to be doing first. So we're here today to talk about putting it all together, customizing gut optimization special strategies to work best for you. And before we start, make sure that you understand that all the information that I present is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. It's just intended as a sharing from my knowledge base, my experience base, my work with lots and lots and lots and lots of patients and people over long distance, and the things that I've learned that work. And it may or may not work for you. So if you're under the care of a doctor, make sure that you bounce this information off of your doctor and get help in deciding what will work for you and what won't. And what I always like to add to that, I may get myself in trouble by adding that, but I like to add that if you've got a doctor you're working with on particular gut problems or health problems, and they're not open to talking to you about diet and lifestyle and herbal approaches, then it might be time to find a new doctor that is more open to being on the cutting edge of healthcare. So I just want to throw that out there. Because just because you say, yeah, I want to do this thing and I want to take some herbs to soothe my reflux, and they say, nah, the only thing to do is take Prilosec or Nexium or something like that, you might have the wrong healthcare provider. Because they don't have the open mind. So I just want to throw that out there. And there are lots of them out there that do have an open mind. Here's where we are and where we've been. We had started out the whole course with the whole preparation stage where you can just get ready and learn the website. We moved into the digestion basics, and I'm a big fan of you understanding how your body works. You don't have to be an anatomist or a physiologist or a biochemist, but understanding how it works. For example, you drive a car. You don't have to understand exactly what all that stuff is and how it all works together, but you have the general idea. You know, the things that can go wrong. You need a battery. You need gasoline. You need the engine to be working. Same thing in your body. And I believe that the more in-depth understanding you have about your body and how it works, the more likely you are to follow through with protocols to put it into balance, because you understand the effects of your choices on how your body's functioning. And you can make better choices that way. I always like to tell the story about someone who said to me after we'd worked together for about 6 months, and she had dropped down, you know, a tremendous amount of weight and was feeling so much better. And she just said to me with lots of love and affection, but she said this to me, "You ruined Cheetos for me." And I had to laugh and ask her to explain. But what she said was, she used to know all this stuff like, this is good food, this is bad food, you should be eating this, you should be eating, shouldn't be eating that. But, you know, she would cheat and she would go out with her friends and she'd eat whatever they served. And that was all well and good. And as she went through the program and learned about trans fats and the effects on hormones and the effects on the immune system and how toxicity affects the body and all this stuff, she just made a decision in her body, not her brain, that she didn't have any interest in Cheetos anymore because she didn't like what it did to her body. And that's my goal, is to teach you as much about how your body works and how the foods impact it, so that the choices don't have to come from a place of, oh, I feel so deprived and I really want that, but I shouldn't because it's not good for me. It comes from a place of like, ew, I don't want that in my body. So that was all what we did. A lot of that in the digestion basics. We talked about how it works. And then in each of the sections, we got into more detail. So we took kind of a tour through your body, you know, starting at your brain, of course, and your mouth, and going down to your stomach, your esophagus, your stomach, your small intestine, your large intestine, out the other end. And then we talked about the pancreas and the liver and the gallbladder along the way. So we did a tour top to bottom. Upper GI, then the intestinal detox repair and recipes, that was part of the small intestine. We had some special strategies that we talked about, and then optimizing elimination, you know, what goes down in that large intestine, but also the liver, which is in charge of a lot of that elimination. So you can go back through and watch presentations and learn as much as you want to about each of those sections. And I'm going to pull a lot of it together here today. Obviously, I'm not going to cover everything we covered in all those sections, but a broad overview so that you have an idea of like a user's guide to the program. And we talked about, does your digestion need help? We did this in the first part. You know, there's those obvious signs, you know, bloating, gas, hemorrhoids, irritable bowel, diarrhea, constipation, etc. But then there's those not so obvious signs. Acne, eczema, brain fog, mood swings, hormone imbalances, autoimmune, allergies, etc. And it's really obvious when you have a gut problem, when you're doubled over in pain or you have gas and bloating. It's not so obvious when you have some of those other things. So I wanted you to tie together that even if you don't have the obvious signs, you may have issues. And you may need to pay attention no matter what you have going on. Need to pay attention to your gut. There are three main functions of the digestive tract. We went through each of those. We went through the different parts. Certain parts have a higher role with regard to different parts, but pretty much all of them get involved. So we have the digestion, which is breaking the food down into this mechanical digestion, where your teeth does, breaking the food down into smaller pieces. And then there's the chemical digestion, which the enzymes do, which break it down into little bitty molecules your body can use. But no matter how good your digestion is, no matter how many digestive enzymes you take to break it down, if you're not absorbing properly, digestion doesn't work, the gut function doesn't work, right? So if you can't get those molecules into the system, or your digestive tract has lost its ability to filter, and it's allowing the toxins that should be going out the other end to get into the bloodstream, or bits and pieces of undigested food, because maybe the digestion isn't working as well as it could, it can irritate the absorptive surfaces. Whatever the case, unless you're absorbing and getting those nutrients into your bloodstream, digestion isn't working. And then finally, you need to eliminate. If you don't eliminate, if you don't get rid of the wastes that pass their way down to the bottom, and you recycle the toxicity in there, not only will your gut not work properly, but the rest of you. That's where you might get those headaches and muscle aches and joint pains and autoimmune conditions and allergies and all the other things that we listed and the not so obvious symptoms. So it's important. And there's all sorts of things that can go wrong. And we talked about a lot of these. We talked about leaky gut. We talked about inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel, gastritis and hiatal hernia and reflux. We talked about a lot of those. There are a lot of things that can go wrong. And I gave you ways to assess. I gave you some online symptom assessment scores. And in our presentation today, we're going to talk about how you interpret those, because we've had a lot of questions about how do you actually interpret those and know what to do based on what you've seen. We looked at transit time. Well, how long does it really take to go from mouth to anus? And is that optimal? Is it too quick and you're not getting all the nutrients absorbed? Or is it too slow and you're reabsorbing and creating new toxins based on bacterial fermentation of the food that sits there for too long? We talked about labs, and there are markers for malabsorption, there's stool tests, and I don't usually go there until we've done a lot to optimize the digestion, because if you've got a lot of habits that are aggravating your gut, I would prefer to see you put good habits in place and see what symptoms are left, if any, and then do things that are more expensive and elaborate, like stool testing. But if you're doing all the processes that we're talking about and you're not getting as good a result as you expect, that's the time to do the labs. There's physical signs, right? There's physical signs on your body, you know, signs of deficiency, signs of excess, eczema, things like that. There's inflammation and allergic reactions you might be having. And then there's symptoms to look at outside the digestive tract, like your skin, your gums, your nails, your hair. And a lot of times when those things aren't proper, when they're not optimal, you got to go back and look to the gut. Because if the gut's not working, the rest of your body ain't happy. And this is just a summary of some of the specific issues we looked at throughout. So if you don't remember, then just go back through some of the other sections. Low stomach acid, we did in the upper GI section. H. pylori, ulcers, gastritis. And I don't think I talked that much about things like hiatal hernia, which is a condition that causes reflux. And it's where the stomach goes up through the lower esophageal sphincter. And that's something that you can actually have manipulated or learn how to manipulate yourself if that happens. There's a number of reasons that can happen. We looked at leaky gut. We looked at celiac. We looked at gallbladder congestion and what happens and what you have to do specific for surgical removal, if you've had surgical removal, which is a very common surgery, by the way. And we did that in the part 5, the elimination. We looked at digestive enzyme insufficiency. Is your stomach not producing enough protease enzymes? Is your pancreas not producing enough of the amylase and lipase and cellulase and protease and all the things it produces to digest your food? We looked at small intestine bacterial overgrowth, which is a quote-unquote up-and-coming kind of a condition. It wasn't talked about much years ago, but we're discovering that in addition to dysbiosis, you know, candida and parasites and things overgrowing in the gut, in the large intestine mainly, there can be bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. And it could actually be your normal or what's called commensal organisms, the organisms that live there in symbiotic relationship, which means harmony. But then they overgrow and they take over, and that can cause problems like gas and bloating. And it's estimated that most problems that people can attribute to irritable bowel, that wastebasket diagnosis of irritable bowel, are actually stimulated by small intestine bacterial overgrowth. We talked about candida and other gut critter overgrowth, and we call that dysbiosis, bad life in the gut. We talked briefly about inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's and colitis and diverticulitis, ulcerative colitis, those sorts of things. And those are pretty serious because by the time those things happen, there's actually ulceration and erosion, serious erosion in there. More serious than leaky gut, and it's a contributing factor, of course, in leaky gut. But in leaky gut, we're talking about, you know, micro breakdown of the spaces in between. And we have a lot of detail about each of these, and you're welcome to go back. This is to serve as a review. We talked about the 4R process and the things in that. If we're trying to get our gut working optimally, we have to do 4 R's in order to get it working. We have to remove the foods and the organisms that are creating havoc. We need to replace the nutrients and the enzymes and the things that are not produced in proper amounts. We need to replace those, and we do that in a number of ways. We need to re-inoculate, which means put back in the good life so that it overshadows the bad life. And we need to repair whatever damage, whether it's from ulcerative colitis or Crohn's or leaky gut or gastritis and ulceration in the stomach or erosion of the esophagus. It's called esophagitis, which happens, by the way, from too much acid backflowing from the stomach into the esophagus. Over time, it erodes. We need to do all of these things. But how do we know where to begin? And how do we know what we need to do? So let's just review quickly what the 4 R's are, and then I'm going to share with you a brand new set of charts that I've put together. I spent a few hours over the last weekend and several days putting together some charts for you that are going to help you to put together and just systematically go through your digestive tract and figure out what the heck is going wrong. So we remove all the foods that can hurt your gut. And this is a partial list, you know, gluten, dairy, sugar. In some people, sugar, alcohols, when they have a sensitivity to those. Refined carbohydrates, all allergens, and that could be the gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts, like the common ones. It could be citrus, it could be tree nuts, shellfish, could be broccoli that you have an allergy to. Removing your allergens is key because it creates inflammation in your gut and it just won't heal. Things that are just damaging overall are caffeine and alcohol. For some people, lectins, which are particular chemical constituents in grains and beans and dairy that aggravate their guts. Not everybody. Trans fats, oxidized fats. Fats have been damaged and cause free radical activity throughout the system that damages your cells. And nightshades, again, that's one of those in some people, not everyone. And if you've got gut stuff that's going on and you've pretty much eliminated the rest of this stuff and you're doing nightshades, you may want to do a trial, you know, a week of no nightshades, or 2 weeks, and see how you do, and then bombard your system with nightshades. It's kind of fun to introduce back, but it can also be quite painful. So you take out things like the nightshades would be tomatoes. Oh, I wouldn't want to give up tomatoes. And peppers, red bell peppers, cayenne, eggplant, tomatoes. What else? Tomatoes, peppers, eggplant are the main ones. And potatoes, yes. So all of those. And then, of course, processed meats with their nitrates and preservatives and all that. These things can all be damaging to your system, and you've got to remove them. So if you're sitting around wondering which of these protocols to put into place as you're munching on your hot dog and drinking your beer and saying, which herbs should I take? You're missing the mark. And I know you guys are not, you're too sophisticated to be doing that, but we do things that are a little more subtle than that, right? You may be going to dinner with your relatives and say, ah, you know, I'll just eat what they're eating. Or you may be drinking your coffee. A lot of people, even though they're health conscious, still drink coffee. And there's controversy over it. There's some folks that are saying coffee's good. And in a way, there are things good in coffee, but there's a lot more damaging stuff in it than I think is good. You know, so this is an important first step. So don't try to jump ahead to all the other steps if you haven't really worked on this one. And yeah, you're going to be working on these things as you go, because making diet changes can be a slow process. We're going to remove, what do we want to remove besides the foods? Unfriendly gut bugs, and we call it dysbiosis. You may say you have a candida overgrowth or a fungal overgrowth. It could be bacteria, it could be viruses, it could be parasites, whatever. Those guys don't belong in there, and we need to remove them. And we gave you a questionnaire to assess the likelihood of this being an issue for you. So we move on to the second R, which is replace. We want to replace your missing enzymes and nutrients, increasing the amount of raw and living foods in your diet because they contain lots of enzyme. With the caveat that if you've got ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, you may have to remove those fibers from your system for some length of time while the gut heals. And you can include the enzymes if you juice, so you don't have the fiber. So there's ways around that. We talked about that. Taking digestive enzymes with all your cooked or complex raw foods, foods that have, you know, a lot of combinations. If you eat an apple, it's unlikely that you need to take digestive enzymes with it. If you eat some lettuce, it's unlikely. But if you start to combine a whole bunch of different things into one meal, it can confuse your digestive tract. And it can be very helpful to take digestive enzymes. Incorporating more of the nutrient-dense foods, which unfortunately are not part of the standard American diet, except in a little place on the plate of very overcooked vegetables. So fresh greens, to the extent you tolerate. And we talked as we went through, and we'll refresh again. Certain folks have certain situations in the gut, hopefully temporary, where you don't tolerate a lot of fiber. Or you may not tolerate particular categories of foods. And those are things called FODMAPs, or specific carbohydrates. And I don't jump into doing those diets because they're very restrictive. I look at, let's do the big stuff first. And if that's not working, then you have to start looking at removing some of the seemingly good foods. You know, spinach or kale. Maybe because you have a sensitivity to some chemical constituent. Not necessarily an allergy, but sensitivity to the specific carbohydrates or the specific acids that are in it, like in spinach where you have oxalates, oxalic acid, or phytates, or like I said, the FODMAPs, and we'll talk about what those are. I'll review what those are. Adding green juices, if you can, are awesome. And some people have to dilute the juice because if they've got erosion, if you've got erosion in your gut, sometimes the juices can be a little bit caustic or acidic, I should say. I had some juice yesterday as I was discussing, you know, gut health with someone, and I realized that juice I had was so mild and light. It was a juice that we'd purchased at the store, that there was no way that was going to affect. But sometimes those really harsh, bitter greens can be a little too much at certain points in time. So we're optimizing. We're figuring out what works for you. But the sea vegetables are awesome to incorporate. You know, whether you soak them and blend them up and add them to soups and smoothies, or whether you just sprinkle them. I love to keep my little shakers of nori and dulse and kelp in my kitchen, and I sprinkle onto my various foods. And you'll find, if you go through my recipes, that I throw kelp even into the sections of the desserts and things like that, just because they don't affect the flavor and they give it a lot of extra nutrition. So hide the nutrition wherever you can. Microalgae like chlorella and spirulina. And you can put those into various foods, into smoothies, soups, salad dressings, whatever you tend to work and eat mostly. And then nutritive herbs and supplements. And I'm going to review some of those. I'm not going to go into all the details about each of those, but the presentations we've done thus far share with you different types of herbs and categories of herbs that are helpful for different parts of your digestive tract. And then we'll move on to repair, right? Repair your digestive tract lining. Demulcents are also known as mucilaginous herbs. You may have seen me or the literature use those interchangeably. They're basically those herbs that absorb a lot of water and become gelatinous and very soothing and healing to the mucosa, which is what lines the entire digestive tract. We talk about therapeutic foods and specific foods and nutrients that have healing properties for the gut. And I gave you a slide in several of the presentations which talked about the different foods and nutrients and which parts of the gut they were most helpful for. We talked about gut healing supplements. And again, we'll optimize that for you, but you don't have to take every single herb and every single supplement I've mentioned, but we're going to need a couple in each category where there's an effect that your system is having. So if you've got some irritation to your lining of your stomach or your intestine, you are going to need some sort of demulcents. Which ones should you choose? Well, you know, if we are eliminating things, if you're sensitive to FODMAPs or specific carbohydrates, we may be eliminating things like slippery elm or psyllium and using others in their place. Hey, anti-inflammatories. Those are important when you've got an inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, but also for leaky gut. Gut healing meal replacements, we talked about those, where for a time you may need to go off of all solid food, but you want to be nourished. Not all of us can go away to a fasting retreat and do that, which is awesome for the digestion, by the way. Not all of us can do that, so we need to sometimes just go on just healing meal replacements instead of eating or drinking. We talked about bitters to stimulate secretions in the digestive tract. And we talked about carminatives, which help to dispel gas and bloating and break those down. And I'm going to review those, and you do have charts of all of these, and you've got PDF documents that list these. And then finally, re-inoculate. We all know I talk a lot about re-inoculate. We talk about fermented foods, cultured foods, probiotic foods. Those are all names that are interchangeable. Lactobacillus and bifidus and Saccharomyces boulardii and L. sporogenes and all kinds of mixed strains. There's hundreds of them, and we need to keep them, and we want to feed them properly. And we can feed them with prebiotics like fructooligosaccharides and inulin. So those are the four R's. And how the heck do you know which ones you need? And how do you know which parts of your digestive tract are askew, other than just like, oh, I feel it here? Well, we gave you some assessments. So this is a page that's all of the assessments. And in addition to the digestive assessments, by popular demand, we added some nutrient assessments. That's really important to digestive health function, because if you don't have good digestive health, you may not have good nutrition in other areas, but also if you don't have good nutrition in certain areas, you may not be able to repair your gut. So it's kind of a, you know, cyclical relationship. So what we included on this page is not only your digestive function assessments, which give a specific set of questions for each of the parts of your digestion, but we added a general nutrient balance assessment, which looks at your overall nutritional status and your fatty acids and your amino acids, because those are super, super important for healing your gut. We gave you a mineral balance assessment. There's certain nutrients and minerals that are more important than others, in particular zinc, super important, but others are important as well. So we give you a mineral balance assessment, and then a vitamin balance assessment, because there's so many of the vitamins are important, you know, your fat-soluble vitamins. Are you having problems with fat-soluble vitamins? If all the fat-soluble vitamins appear to be low, well, then maybe it's because there's some liver and gallbladder problems, because they help you digest. So we gave you those three, and then we gave you a candida assessment and a leaky gut assessment. And I'm going to show you how to put these on a chart for yourself, and you'll have a big picture as to where you are at the start and how you progress, and then which things still need work towards the end. So that's that, and that's a page that you can access on your site under the Resources tab. It'll say Assessments. It's also accessible through Part 1, which is the Getting to Know Your Digestive Tract, where we talk about assessments. You can access this page, and that way you can get to all of these assessments in one place. And that's especially good when you've gone through some of the protocols and you want to just see where you're at. Take an inventory of where you're at. This is an assessment interpretation chart. And what you get to do is do those assessments on the page I just shared with you, and you're going to get a score for each of those. So for low stomach acid, the ideal score is less than 10. The same for excess stomach acid, pancreas, small intestine, large intestine, and liver gallbladder. And the way these assessments are done, it's based on the kinds of symptoms that you would see if this was out of balance. And the score you're getting is a percentage of the total you could have gotten. So you really want less than 10% of all the possible symptoms of low stomach acid to be true. It's a severe problem, or a very severe problem, and would have very high priority if those scores are above 50 on any of those, any of the basic fives. So in the program guide that we've given you, you're going to see some charts. I'm going to repeat the charts that were from those assessments for a review. So, you know, if it's above 50, it's red. That's severe. If it's between 35 and 50, it's orange. It's a priority, high priority. You know, we have the others. And all the way down to it's yellow, warning. And then blue is kind of like you're getting there. And green is good. So less than 10 is green. Below that, we have the Candida dysbiosis, and it's done a little bit differently. There's a lot of historical stuff in the Candida dysbiosis one. And ideally, you want it under 40. And some of you will never get there because maybe you have a history of lots of antibiotic use, which is going to always predispose you to having problems there. And you're just going to have to take better precautions, better probiotics, periodically doing gut cleanses or Candida cleanses. The leaky gut, the ideal is zero. We really don't want any signs of leaky gut. And then for SIBO, the actual number there is probably less than 20. I don't have a SIBO assessment of my own yet. I'm working on one. I'm working on looking at all the different possible ways it manifests and how I really want to relate it. But in the guide, I'm giving you a link to some other site that has a SIBO assessment. And the score can go up to 240 on that particular SIBO assessment. Okay, so you put your scores and you put the starting date that you did that. But the important part is determining the priority. Very high, high, medium, or low. And that way you know where you need to work and where you need to get started working and putting the extra focus. And in your document, you have a chart that says, you know, if your score on any of these digestive parts is greater than 50, it's a very high priority. You know, between here and here, a high priority, etc. So all of that is in the document. And you just mark it on here. I would ideally say mark it in color, right? Mark it in green if it's below the 10. Mark it in yellow or orange for the medium and high. And then red for the very high. Okay, so you could use the colors I've used, like blue, yellow, orange, and red in those boxes. So at a glance, you can look at your chart and know where you need to work. And then once you've started some of the protocols, the herbs and the habits that I've given you, when you've started on working on some of those, put in a date. And if it's a particular protocol that has a start and an end, like the 30-day gut repair or the 28-day candida cleanse, you put the end date in there. And then you put your score after. So you go back and do these again afterwards, and you see what's left to work on. What do you have to work on more? Because what you're going to see is that even if you haven't directly worked on one of these parts, but you've worked on some of the basics and you've worked on one of the other parts, that the scores for everything pretty much go down. And if they don't, then you know what's your next priority and your next. Healing your gut, as much as I'd like to say that it can be completely healed in 30 days, for some it's not because the problems have been outstanding for a long time. But you can get major improvements when you put these things into place in a systematic way and you're careful for about 30 days. Major, major improvements. And I see it over and over again in my private clients. So that's the chart. In the handout, in the guidebook, I give you an example of this chart filled in so you get an idea of what you're going for. Good starting point. And then we have all these action plans. And we've gone through in each section putting together, okay, now that I've assessed it and I know where things are wrong, what do I do? And there are certain things that no matter what's going on that you're going to need to do. And then there's certain things that depend on what's going on and you can customize it for you. So after you complete your online assessment, you can look at starting a daily gut rejuvenator. And what we found is that some people don't do well with the citrus. They're either allergic to it or have some inflammation in their esophagus or stomach that it's just a little bit too strong for. And you can modify your daily gut rejuvenator, and the essential oils in there can be very helpful. Or you can precede the daily gut rejuvenator with something like marshmallow or slippery elm, which are soothing. Adding daily green drinks, splendid soups, things that are high in those nutrients, doing your pre-meal rituals, heart math and breathing and appreciation and chewing during the food and eliminating the foods that hurt your digestion, taking bitters. Not everybody needs to take bitters 15 minutes before meals. It can be helpful, but if everything's working well, you don't necessarily need to take it. Doing the HCL challenge, if desired and if indicated. And it's only indicated if you have some symptoms of low stomach acid, a fair number of them, but also if you don't have symptoms of high stomach acid. Because you don't want to start doing an HCL challenge if you've got already high stomach acid or if you've got erosion and inflammation. That's not a good thing to do. We're going to have to work on that differently. We're going to have to work on soothing before optimizing HCL. And then enzyme. I'm just going to continue and go through these, and then I'll show you another chart that I created to help pull this together. The gut-soothing herbs. Those are for folks who have some of that burning and gaseousness and pain after eating. Staying calm and present, that's for everybody. And then we have some specific protocols that not everybody needs to do, and you need to assess based on the answers to the evaluation. Whether you need a candida parasite cleanse before the repair phase, if it's very high. Because if you don't get rid of the gut bugs, no matter what you do to fix the lining, the gut bugs are going to continue to erode it. But if you have just a moderate score, you can do them concurrently. So the candida parasite cleanse, the 30-day leaky gut repair. And again, if you have a higher leaky gut score, or you have something like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. If you're doing some of this stuff and you find that, gosh, every time I drink a green smoothie or eat vegetables or a salad, I just feel bloaty and gassy. Well, you may have sensitivities that are not being addressed. You may have to look at the modified specific carbohydrate food list and follow that plan for some length of time to get those things out while your gut is healing. It's not intended to be a long-term diet, the specific carbohydrate, or my modified version, which includes FODMAPs, and I'll review what those are in a bit. And then investigate SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So you're doing all this good stuff, and you're still bloated and gassy after you eat. Maybe you have SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and I've given you ways to look at that. And then liver gallbladder cleanse. Everybody could benefit from it, but you especially need to look at it is if your liver gallbladder score is high, but also if you tend to show up low on your fat-soluble nutrients when you do your nutrient assessment. So this is, so far, what we've talked about. This is in a nutshell. All the details about all of these pieces are included in the program in the appropriate modules. And this is a chart. It looks overwhelming right now. Basically, what I did was I listed across the top all of the things that could be a problem. So we have low stomach acid, excess stomach acid, small intestine and pancreas imbalance, like not enough enzymes, or large intestine problems, like not eliminating properly, liver gallbladder issues, leaky gut and inflammatory bowel disease, FODMAPs, which we'll talk about in a bit, that stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Those are all things that if you have sensitivities to, if you have gut bugs that are really out of whack, those gut bugs might be fermenting those food components, which means that you may be fermenting even good food and having problems, which is why we look at the specific carbohydrate FODMAP diet list and maybe follow that for a bit. It's like kind of an elimination diet. And then SIBO, the small intestine bacterial overgrowth. So down the side, I've listed all the different protocols that we've talked about and all the different components of healing your gut. And I've marked in the columns in color where things are most important, where things are desirable, where they're not indicated. So if you look down the side, I've got gut rejuvenator, green drinks, pre-meal ritual, removing gut-hurting foods, elimination diet, adding gut-healing foods, HCL challenge, bitters plus zinc, enzymes, soothing herbs, antispasmodics, carminatives, candida parasite cleanse, leaky gut cleanse, liver gallbladder cleanse, probiotics, prebiotics, and cholagogues, which are liver and gallbladder supporting type herbs, stimulating herbs. And then in the columns, if it's in light green, that's something that's desirable for whatever those conditions are where it's light green. So you'll see for gut rejuvenator, gut rejuvenator can be helpful for all of those spots, with the exception that if you have excess stomach acid and maybe some erosion going on and irritation going on, you might find that the apple cider vinegar or the lemon juice or the lime juice can be irritating, okay? But mostly the gut rejuvenator is going to be helpful for everything. If we look at green drinks, it's pretty much good for everything, with the exception that sometimes if your gut is really inflamed, sometimes when the gut is really inflamed or irritated, then the green drinks can be irritating just because there's a lot of bitter in them and there's a lot of acids and things like that. So if that's the case, then you're going to go slow on the, or you're going to modify which greens you use in the drinks. So for example, if you do have problems with the fermentables and you're following a temporary FODMAP specific carbohydrate diet, then you can replace whatever greens are in the recipes with the ones that are acceptable. So whereas spinach might not be acceptable, well, spinach is okay on that one. Let's just say, it's not broccoli is not acceptable, but cauliflower is. You replace it, or cabbage is. So you replace those foods, and you can still do your green drinks, but you just want to be cognizant of doing the ones that your body tolerates. And the same thing for SIBO. Here's the universal. The pre-meal ritual. Chewing during the meal and staying calm is good for all. And I would venture to say that if you're not doing that, it's going to be really hard for you to get your gut to work. If you're not taking time to show thanks, calm yourself down and shift yourself out of the fight-flight mode that we tend to be in throughout the day, then none of the gut stuff is going to work. So if you're having trouble with anything's not working, make sure that that piece is in place. Okay? Removing the gut-hurting foods. I listed that as green, and anything where it's dark green, it means it's especially important for that. So gut-hurting foods is especially important if you're showing excess stomach acid signs, which means there's a lot of inflammation probably in the upper GI. Especially important if you have leaky gut or inflammatory bowel disease. Important for everything, but especially important. You cannot miss it. Remove the gut healing food, hurting foods. Elimination diet, food sensitivities. That's important. It's especially important for leaky gut. It's especially important for leaky gut. Because when you have those inflammatory foods and the sensitivities, the antigens are going to get into your bloodstream. So that's especially important. adding gut healing foods is important for everything. And there's a caveat, and everything that's pink is there where there's a warning that you make sure if you've got issues with inflammatory bowel, if you've got specific carbohydrate, SIBO, that you're careful about which of those gut healing foods and eliminating the ones that are not good ideas based on those. The HCL challenge. We got a little bit of every color in the HCL challenge. HCL challenge is not for everybody. It's an important piece if you have low stomach acid. It's a no-no if you have signs of excess stomach acid. If your score on excess stomach acid is above 10 or above, you do not do an HCL challenge. You hear me on that? It's important. Do not do an HCL challenge if your excess stomach acid score is greater than 10. And then, of course, HCL challenge can be helpful with small intestine and large intestine issues. It's very important when you have liver gallbladder stuff, because the HCL, if you don't have enough HCL, you're not going to be stimulating a lot of the movement. The HCL acts as a cholagogue, which means that it helps the movement and the flow of the bile. So it's very important. The HCL challenge is most important if you've got scores on the low stomach acid or the liver gallbladder. It's moderately important for the others, and it's a no-no for excess stomach acid, and you have to proceed with caution if you've got leaky gut or inflammatory bowel disease, because the HCL, if it's not properly neutralized, can irritate. Now, here's the deal. If you've got both gallbladder problems, you've lost your gallbladder, you have no gallbladder, and you're having some problems with Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, do not do an HCL challenge, because the gallbladder is one of the important pieces for neutralizing the stomach acid when it comes back out. The other thing that might be a caution is if you've had intestinal bypass or gastric bypass surgery, where the stomach is being bypassed and food is going directly into the jejunum of the small intestine. If that's the case, do not do HCL challenge, because you'll take the HCL and it will go down to the lower part of your gut without being neutralized. Okay, because you're bypassing the duodenum and if you have no gallbladder on top of that, that's a double, triple whammy. Okay, so be careful with HCL challenge. Only do it if you have a significantly high score on low stomach acid and you've tried bitters plus zinc and it's not working. Okay, bitters plus zinc is my choice, my treatment of choice, if you want to use that word, for the low stomach acid. You take bitters before each meal, you take zinc along with it so your body can produce more. Again, you want to proceed with caution with excess stomach acid, because if you stimulate your body to produce too much before you heal it with the mucilaginous herbs, you can be in trouble. Okay, the most important thing for the excess stomach acid is going to be the soothing herbs and removing the gut-hurting foods. Small intestine bitters, bitters again are good for both the low stomach acid and the gallbladder, but it's good for the entire digestive tract with the exception of if you have too much stomach acid. Same thing with enzymes. Super, super important if you have low stomach acid, if you have small intestine and pancreas issues, if you have liver gallbladder issues, but it can be helpful throughout. Again, a caution. Sometimes if you've got gastritis or some sort of erosion in your esophagus or stomach as a result of excess stomach acid, then the enzymes, the proteolytic enzymes in particular, can be burny. It can feel burny. So you got to be careful. Okay? The gut soothing is good for everything, and especially for excess stomach acid and inflammatory bowel, especially because those areas have eroded tissue, right? And again, they're good, except you want to make sure that you just leave out certain ones in the FODMAP and the SIBO, so that should be a caution. Antispasmodic herbs, what are those? Those are herbs that stop your gut from... and when you have irritable bowel, it's especially important. So I marked that especially important for the large intestine. But it's nice to have things that calm and soothe throughout, things like the chamomile and lavender and things like that. Carminative herbs across the board, good for everything, except if there's any of them that are precluded. And you just have to look to see if there's any precluded on the FODMAP or specific carbohydrate. Candida parasite cleanse, you especially need if you've got leaky gut and inflammatory bowel. So you should be doing the Candida parasite cleanse, the leaky gut protocol, especially, of course, for leaky gut. So have the spots that are dark green are where you especially need it. And the spots that are light green is where it would be helpful. The spots that are pink will have some caution. And red, you just don't want to do it. So you can see there's not a lot of red here. There's a lot of light green. So establishing good habits is going to be key. And when you use your other chart, which gives you the importance, your relative importance of things, you can narrow your activities down that way. Prebiotics and probiotics, the only cautions are with SIBO, you don't want to do them in the early phases because if you've got an overgrowth of even good bacteria, it's going to just feed the overgrowth. And if you've got problems with FODMAPs, prebiotics are certain foods that have like inulin and fructooligosaccharides that your body may ferment. Okay, so all of these things, they get better as you get the better habits in place. And finally, we have listed cholagogues, which are the herbs that will help to stimulate bile flow. And especially important if you have low stomach acid or if you have a liver gallbladder issues, you've got to be careful with those if you have excess stomach acid because some of them might stimulate excess HCl. And they're pretty much good for everything with the caveats, of course, that you just look at the lists for FODMAP or SIBO and make sure that none of those are on that list. The next piece of this presentation, we're not going to go into detail. I've just relisted for you the various types of herbs that you can do for the parts of the digestive tract and which ones are there. So they're all in one place. The soothing ones, the demulcents, also called mucilaginous herbs that soothe and heal. There's the anti-inflammatories, which help to reduce the inflammation. There's the carminatives, which reduce gas and bloating and enhance digestive secretions. Remember, those are good throughout. There's the natural antispasmodics, especially good for IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, but also good for that, you know, that nervous stomach type of thing that a lot of people have. There's antimicrobials that can maim or kill the bad gut critters. There's probiotics. There's the foods. There's prebiotics, food sources of prebiotics, and prebiotics, again, feed the good organisms. There's some therapeutic foods we talked about that have particular categories of constituents that help the body to repair, like things that produce help you to produce nitric oxide, N-acetylcysteine, and arabinogalactans. You can take those things as separate supplements, or you can enhance your diet by including foods that are supportive of those. There's a list of the gut healing supplements that we had in the part 3. There's a list of liver supportive foods. You're going to see a lot of overlap between these foods. And when you see these lists of foods and herbs, it doesn't mean that you have to eat all of them. But what you would do is look at your priority list and see, oh, I've got a really high score in that liver. Let me find that liver support list. Ah, okay, which of these herbs can I choose? Oh, wow, I'm going to choose these three because they also help to support my intestine, my growth of the intestinal lining. You see what I'm saying? So you're going to use your charts. I would have you print out those charts separate from the manual and then fill them out and keep them handy. Cholagogue herbs, those are the ones that stimulate the flow of bile or stimulate bile secretion and strengthen the liver, enhance detoxification. And there's a list of those. So you see there's a lot of things, a lot of foods. And by using these charts, it's going to help you to isolate and narrow down what it is that you really need. So the special circumstances we talked about, specific carbohydrate diet. There's specific carbohydrates in foods that are identified according to specific carbohydrate monosaccharides, which are single molecule sugars are absorbed and well, but the others are going to cause bacterial fermentation and can cause problems. And so the SCAPS diet eliminates all of those. the FODMAPs, which is fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. And polyols are actually sugar alcohols. Those, they prohibit all kinds of starches. It's very, very few things that are starchy that are on there. So there's no grains on there, or very few. And it's a very restrictive diet. They're not intended to be done long term. Generally, 2 weeks to a month to get things calmed down. And then there's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Like some of these gut critters get into the wrong place and they grow and they cause bloating and gas and spasm. With the specific carbohydrate, it was originally intended for Crohn's disease. It's basically a summary of that. The monosaccharides are easily absorbed and allow the disaccharides and polysaccharides not. That's the theory behind the specific carbohydrate. May or may not be a problem for you. It's not a problem for me. I do just fine on any of those foods. FODMAPs, fermentable oligosaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. And there are diets. You can read diet books and all that. And basically, the idea is that these carbohydrates are incompletely absorbed in the gut. And when you have gut bacteria that are out of balance, they're easily fermented. Fermented in a bad way. I mean, there's a confusion with that word because we talk about fermented foods. The fermented foods, the bacteria have already broken down and you take in and you've got these great bacteria that are good. But they also exert an osmotic effect, meaning it increases the absorption of fluid, which is why they can cause diarrhea and lead to IBS symptoms. So stress is a big piece of this. So remember, what did we say was the most important thing to start with for everybody is the way you eat your meals, the stress you're in when you eat your meals, or the lack of stress. And then SIBO again is the overgrowth of large intestinal bacteria that get into the small intestine, or the overgrowth of bacteria that belong there, but they're just, they've gotten out of relationship with each other. They steal some of the nutrients, which is why doing those nutrient assessments is going to be important. They damage the mucosa, they trigger inflammation, they cause extra mucus, and you can get gas and bloating and all sorts of symptoms when you have an overgrowth. And these are the protocols. Again, we're not going to go through all these, but these are the protocols I put all in one place for you. There's the 28-day Candida protocol, and for the details of these, you go to that particular document. There's a 3 or 5 page document that describes it. There's the intestinal rebuild and healing jumpstart, and we've got a 28-day, this is the beginning of it, there's a 28-day version of it in your manual. There's the SIBO management, the different kinds of things you need to do with SIBO. And also, oftentimes with SIBO, an elemental diet is really important. And what that means is a diet of pre-digested foods. So protein powders and amino acid powders and things that are already easy to digest are in there, and no solids. When you can do this for two to four weeks, oh my God, it can do well. But you also have to kill these guys, and there's a list of some of those herbs that will also help with candida, by the way. Berberine, allicin from garlic, oregano, neem, cinnamon, those are all very potent antimicrobials. And then you want to repair the gut, all the stuff we've talked about so far. There's something called prokinetics, because sometimes with a SIBO, the reason that the bacteria overgrow is that gut is not pushing them along. There's this kinetic activity that happens in the gut that pushes the bacteria along and sends them out through the large intestine. And so there's things that are used. There's certain drugs that are used. There's low-dose naltrexone, which is a drug, but it's kind of an off-label use of the drug. And then an herb called triphala, which is it's actually a combination of three herbs, amla, and then two others that I can never pronounce because they're Indian names, they're Ayurvedic. So triphala can be very, very helpful as a prokinetic, but also as a good gut suit. And then, of course, restoring the gut function, the stomach acid, the ileocecal valve. And we talk about those things throughout. And then we have the gentle 5-day liver gallbladder cleanse. This is not to be confused with the liver gallbladder cleanse where you're drinking a quart of olive oil and, you know, after you've drunk apple juice for a few days to soften the stones and then you release a gazillion stones. This is more just as a gentle activity that you can do for your gut. And then we talked about living without a gallbladder. And if you don't have a gallbladder, go and read this slide and be really, you know, cognizant and mindful of the things you need to be careful about. And everybody needs to do their pre-meal ritual and the during-meal ritual. The daily gut rejuvenator modified to fit your specific needs. If you have to take out the peppermint, even just lemon. Like if you have reflux, the peppermint may aggravate the reflux, so you have to be careful about that. If you've got eroded esophagus, possibly the acid from the lemon or lime might affect it as well. Gut-friendly foods, we've talked about these over and over. Optimizing your digestion. Let's just go through a little summary. Eat in a calm, relaxed state. Start the day with some sort of cleansing beverages, warm or room temperature, the gut rejuvenator. Drink a glass of lukewarm water a half an hour before a meal. Can just warm it up and get it ready for digestion. Bitters, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. I should say 5 to 15 minutes. Chewing your food thoroughly, eating slowly, taking digestive enzymes with the heavy-duty meals, doing food combining or food sequencing, which means, you know, if you eat your starches before your proteins, you don't eat them together. If needed, some people don't need to do that. Gallbladder and liver support, healing your inflammation, probiotics, colon cleansing. These are all parts of optimizing your digestion. We've talked about them in various spots throughout the program. So here's kind of an example of a schedule you can do. Things that you make sure you do every day. The gut rejuvenator, a green breakfast with chia seeds. If you tolerate chia seeds, some people with the SCD or FODMAP problem do not tolerate chia seeds. So if you try to eat chia seeds and you find you get gas and bloaty, it could be a SIBO problem or an SCD FODMAP problem. Your heart math, your chewing, daily brassicas if you tolerate them, because they're so healing for the gut. The gut herders avoiding. Greens at each meal if you can do it. I do greens at every single meal. I do not do a meal without greens, whether it's a green juice, whether it's a green smoothie, a green soup, green vegetables, salad. Greens are loaded with nutrients. If you don't tolerate them, you're going to have to look at the ones you do tolerate as you heal your gut so that you do tolerate them in the future. Probiotics, bitters, enzymes, exercise is so critically important to keeping the tone of the digestive tract. The colagogues for the liver, regular cleansing, and hydration. That's the program in a nutshell. I put it all together in one place to give you a reminder of all the pieces. For the details, we've got the PDF documents that go into details about the different cleanses. You've got the presentations and there you go.